Well, good evening, everybody. Thanks for the opportunity to be with you and to share some things about Ethiopia. It's a place and a work that is near and dear to my heart, as you will see, and I hope I can share some things with you so that you'll have more knowledge and understanding and appreciation. I want you to be encouraged that there are Christians in other places whom we know nothing about, for the most part, but who love the Lord dearly and deeply. They're a great encouragement to us. If we have been an encouragement to Ethiopians, they don't know how much they have encouraged me and others through the stories that I'm able to share with others. So little did I know in the year 2001 when I stepped off the plane and onto the tarmac at Addis Ababa at Bole International Airport how much it would change my life and my faith. And I have shared this with my home congregation at Castleberry. And we're all touched and moved by things that happen in Ethiopia. The Lord is giving great increase since we've been going, which is about 18 years. I've gone for 17 years. Americans, to my knowledge, have been going about 18 years. The number of people that have been baptized is in the thousands, and there are several, about three times as many local churches as there were when we started. And it's not our work. We've encouraged, we've trained, we've given foundation and instruction, but the Ethiopians have worked hard and they've taught well, and we give God the glory for that. So I want to talk about teaching Jesus and touching lives. That's what we do in Ethiopia. And to begin, I want to just give you a little orientation to Ethiopia. It is on the eastern side of Africa, known as the Horn of Africa. And it is a landlocked nation. It has no access of its own to any water. You have to go down a road to the east and over to a little country called Djibouti to get access to the sea. As you can see there. So here it is on a larger world map, Africa, and then Ethiopia right up there in the Horn. So I brought along some facts and figures about Ethiopia that I thought you might be interested in. About 100 million people live there, and this is not a misprint. The average annual income has risen since I've been going to Ethiopia. It's about $500 per year, of course. The national language is Amharic, though there are many other languages spoken. And sometimes we have to use two translators because nobody can go from English to the local language that's used. So somebody has to translate from English to Amharic, and then Amharic to, say, Kimbata or Hadia or some other local language. So those are the figures about religion. Ethiopian Orthodox is kind of a state religion, 44%, 34% Muslim, and 19% Protestant. We would go in that category. And though there are many Muslims in Ethiopia, we've never had any difficulty. We've never felt threatened. The Ethiopians who take care of us are very sensitive to where we go and when. And they're protective of us, and we just have had no security issues at all. The nearest we came is when we were traveling in the countryside one Sunday afternoon, and we came upon a herd of camels, and that was the first time I'd ever seen camels in Ethiopia, and there were a lot of them, so we stopped and wanted to get pictures. And as soon as we got out, many tribesmen, the Adal tribesmen, and they're distinctive because of a certain haircut they have. They came up and they were shaking their sticks at us and things like that. And our driver, who was a hired driver with our vehicle, knew their language, and so he put it right back to them. And so I learned later that what they wanted it was money for us to take pictures of the camels. And so I thought we were being threatened in some way. So while he distracted them, we took our pictures, then we got back in and drove off. And so learning that later, we would have happily paid them some money for But the camels really didn't belong to them. They just kind of took them as their own and tried to make some money. And that's the biggest threat I've ever had in Ethiopia. So how the connection with Ethiopia began, it really began in the 70s. In the 1970s, in July of that year, in the New York Times newspaper, Fay Starr, who was a preacher in Fort Worth, Texas, was reading the classified ads. Actually, he was in another place, I think holding a gospel meeting. But he read the classified ads, and it advertised for a professor at Addis Ababa University who had a doctorate degree in certain fields of study. And he had been preparing himself, getting an education so he could go to other places and teach, ostensibly teach. He really wanted to go and preach. So he saw this ad, and Dartha, his wife, said, "Faye, that was written just for you." And so the next day he called, and the president of the university happened to be in Washington, D.C., and they set up an interview, and he got hired, and in 3 weeks they were on their way to Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. That was Faye and Dartha Starr. So they moved there. He taught at the university, and they found Christians and joined with them and encouraged them and taught them. But a revolution, a communist revolution, occurred in 1975, and foreign nationals had to leave Ethiopia, so the Starrs returned to the United States. It wasn't too long after that that Faye had health problems and he passed away. But Dartha, his wife, kept in contact with the Ethiopians they had met and loved, and she sent money when she could. She would take memorials, and she sent some of her own means there. And in the year 2000, she asked Harry Pickup. She learned Harry Pickup Jr. had a little class down at Temple Terrace that is affectionately called Pickup University. And she learned about that. So she asked him if he would go to Ethiopia and kind of export that. And Harry said he would do that. And so Harry took Bob Owen, Melvin Curry, and James Finney, all men in their 70s, to Ethiopia. And they found fruitful field of labor, and so they decided that work needed to be done there. So in the fall of that year, I host a little Bible study for fellow preachers of mine, and Melvin Curry came to that Bible study, and he told me we need younger men to go to Ethiopia. So I just kind of nodded, yeah, sure. So in a couple of months, he called me, and he said, "We need younger men to go to Ethiopia. Will you go?" And so at that time, all I knew about Ethiopia was that it had famine sometimes. And I had seen pictures of children whose stomachs were bloated and they looked terrible and sad, of course. That's all I knew about Ethiopia. But I talked to my wife and I talked to the elders at Castleberry, where I had been preaching for a while. And so we all agreed that I could go and the church would support me to do that. So in the year 2001, I went there for the first time. I flew by myself. It's a long flight. It takes about 22 hours in the plane to get there, and which is the longest that I had ever flown at that time. I had a gospel meeting, so I couldn't go with them. I had to wait till that was over, and I joined up with them. So I began my work there, and I've gone every year since then. Castleberry Church is still supporting me to do that. And so I want to tell you a little about the work that I've done along with other Americans in the city and the countryside, in homes, huts, and hearts. So these are younger, thinner pictures. That's a Zerahun. He is a major player in Ethiopia. He is the key to much of our work. He is proficient in English and in Amharic. He is faithful to the Lord. He is experienced. He's wise beyond his years. And he has helped us immensely. In fact, much of what we do cannot have been possible, I think, without him. And he is my good and dear friend in addition to all that. So here is just some pictures I brought along of preaching. This is at a local church in Addis Ababa. It was known as Meganani at the time. Then we go to the countryside. What happens in the countryside is that a particular church in a village will host us for that day. And they'll put a canvas. That village has a canvas that anybody can use. And so the church borrows it and they spread it out and we meet under there. And not only do people from that village, but surrounding villages, some people walk 6 and 8 hours to come and be where we are. So I have to work on myself when I get back to the United States because we have gospel meetings, you know, and we have climate-controlled buildings and cars, and we fly preachers in, and they're good preachers, and they do good work, and people don't come. In Ethiopia, they walk, and they sit on the ground, and we teach for long periods of time, and they ask, can you stay longer and teach more? So I have to work on myself. I don't live in Ethiopia. This is not Ethiopia, so I have to remember that. And I'll show you a few more pictures about our village work. Here's a setting in which I was using two translators. That would be, the middle one would be translating in Amharic, and Demica would be translating in Kambata. Somewhere along the way, I think it was 2002 or 3, I broke my ankle playing paintball with my sons. And so when I went to Ethiopia, I was down to one crutch, but I still needed to go. So Lufthansa, a hard airline. I tried everywhere in the world to use my crutch and my ankle broken to get a better seat on the plane, but they weren't having it. So what the Ethiopians did is made me a stool. And so we loaded it on the top of the vehicle wherever we went. And I sat that year to teach. But when I got back from Ethiopia, I think I was there for 3 weeks. I didn't have the crutch because my ankle had healed. So the moral of that story is if you have a broken ankle, go to Ethiopia. It heals. So I've made it my practice to use stories and illustrations to try to bring the gospel alive. And they love them. And this is one I was telling about, the legend of three trees. And so I was talking about tree number 2 there. So the first time I went to Ethiopia in 2001, I had a few weeks before taught a lesson at Casterbury, preached a sermon that I called Remember Who You Are and Remember Where You're Going. And that has a little ring to it. It was on Colossians chapter 3. So I made little refrigerator door reminders for people at Casterbury. They said, remember who you are, remember where you're going, and I laminated them, put magnet on the back, people put them on their refrigerator. So I went to Ethiopia, and I suggested at the end of my sermon that that would be a good thing to do. Well, Gatachu got up afterwards, and he said, Brother Dave, we like your idea, but it won't work in Ethiopia. He said, number one, hardly anybody has a refrigerator. And he said, number two, it is in our culture, men never go to the refrigerator. Women do that. You ask the woman of the house, and she takes care of that for you. So it won't work in Ethiopia. So you could tell I was a novice, didn't know what I was doing, and didn't know the culture. So 10 years later, I revisited Ethiopia, and I decided I was going to preach that sermon again. Well, in the meantime, someone had moved from Ethiopia and was a member at Casterbury, who's Biena. He was also a professor at Addis Ababa University. So I got Biena to translate for me, as you see in the picture. That says in Amharic, remember who you are and remember where you're going. So what I did that year, instead of the refrigerator door reminders, I took a sign to each village where I was teaching and preaching that year. And I preached the sermon. And I had a little hammer and nails, and I would nail it to the, all those canvases were held up by a big pole, so I would nail it to the pole, and I would leave it in that village so they could remember who you are and remember where you're going. And even last year when I went, that would have been in 2011, I think. So this past January when we went, I saw one of those signs, so they're still around. So we were at one place, and during the prayer, I was looking for my nail. I had a little bag of nails and a hammer, and I couldn't find my nails. So I didn't pay much attention to the prayer on that occasion. So I was just scrounging around in my bag for my nails. So couldn't find them. So I noticed in a table sitting in front of me that there was a little nail sticking up. So during the prayer, I used the claw end of the hammer, and I pulled the nail out. And so when it was over, I used that nail to put the sign up on the pole. But then I got to feeling bad about it, and I confessed to the Ethiopians what I'd done, and they thought it was hilarious. Because I was afraid the table might fall or something. So anyway, the message was, whoever you are, wherever you are, we have to remember who we are and remember where we're going. We're God's people, we're Christians, and we want to go to heaven. And that's true in Ethiopia, in America, and we must not forget it. So I left a sign everywhere I went that year. This is the most beautiful setting I've ever preached. It was in Tita, T-I-T-A. So it was out over a valley, and everybody was facing me. My back was to the beauty. So if my sermon wasn't everything they wished it to could be, they could look at the scenery at least. So that's the beautiful valley they saw. This year, I was preaching a sermon about soils, and so the sower and the soils. I was talking about how you can improve your soil. I was telling about my grandfather's plot of land that he wanted to improve, and it was terrible. It was clods, it was clay, it was rock. So he worked on it, and I was about 13 at the time, and he brought one of those tillers that has the tines out front. And guess who got to use that in his very hard soil? So, you know, you turn that thing on and you just shake like this. And so I was using two translators in places and I had fun with it. So I told the story and I did that. And so the second translator did that. And then the third translator did that. So I really worked on that. And I remember doing that here at this place. So not only do we teach Jesus, but we touch lives. We try to have interaction with the Ethiopians. This is Wunji. I've been to that village almost every time I've been there. And we hug them, and they hug us, and we shake hands. And I was teaching the kids at this place how to fist bump. You know, they didn't know how to do that, which was really to my benefit because their hands are always dirty. So I would line them up on the front row and get them to put their fist out, and I would go down and fist bump like that. Kids like to learn that. So how do we get around in the countryside? I want to tell you a little about the roads. Ethiopian roads are terrible. They're absolutely terrible. In the city, the rule of the road, they're paved roads in the city, most of them. A lot of side roads are not. But the rule of the road in Ethiopia is that you blow your horn and you go. There are no stop signs, or there are very few traffic lights, and whoever's bravest goes across the intersection first. So I have a little video here. I didn't make this, but I've been at this square. This is Meskel Square, and it is a little faster. It's sped up a little, but this really happens. I've seen it. That guy's coming right out in the center. There goes another one. Is that the way it works? That's the way it works. So I wanted to take you down the roads that we travel in the Ethiopian countryside. So they're all dirt and gravel. A few of them are, some of the main roads are paved, but that's not been the case the whole time I've been going. They've been improving the main roads in the countryside for quite some time. So it's nothing to see a cart like this pulled by donkeys or a donkey and a young man standing up on it. Did I do that?
Okay.
I'm okay. Yeah. All right. So Wednesdays and Fridays are market days. And so as we go, people will be going to the market. And these people are carrying some kind of straw, chaff, I think it is. But nothing goes to waste. I mean, they find uses for everything. So they're going to market. And these probably have some kind of a grain. Teff is the grain that's grown only in Ethiopia, and they use it for a bread that's kind of like a crepe. It's called injera. Did you tell them about that thing? So it's nothing to have to stop where we're going for the cows, herd of cows to pass. So this is just dropping off down a hill somewhere. You never know. Had car trouble. So I just have a series of shots to give you a feel for the roads that we have to travel. We rent a vehicle, and it comes with a driver. And they're quite skilled. This was the year it rained. We were going on a place like a narrow passage like that. And so the back of the car slid down on one side of the embankment. And the driver was just doing everything he could using his feet and the gears and his hands. And he got us back up, and then it slid down on the other side. Betty Dart and Pat Underwood were with me, so I turned around and looked in the back seat, and they both had their hands covering their faces like that. But we made it safely. That's a paved road. Sometimes we go where there's hardly any road at all. And what happens in a place like this is that if the driver doesn't think he can go on the road that's been used, or it's going to be too rough, or he's going to get stuck, he just makes another road. So here's where we're going back to the village where we'll be doing our teaching. And really there is no road. The brethren have cut the brush so the vehicle can make it through there. So I would say that traveling in the Ethiopian countryside is quite an unusual experience. And when it rains, they have a rainy season in July and August, and we avoid going at that time, but sometimes it rains at other times. And this is a bus. This is public transportation. People inside and outside hanging on, and it's raining. This year, we saw more accidents than we've ever seen before. So I assume there's probably more and more vehicles, and so more and more accidents. In the year 2016, we were going through a village, and we didn't hit a pedestrian. A pedestrian hit us. She was about 18, probably 18 or 16. She was carrying a mattress or something like that, and she was looking back. And she ran right into the side of our vehicle. So she was laying over to the side of the road. This shows the wisdom and the maturity of Zerahun. He's always calm and cool and in control, so he gets out. So there is no ambulance that comes. There is no fire department or police. So we end up putting the girl in our vehicle, and we were packed anyway. And so people were sitting on my lap, and we squeezed her in. We were taking her up the road to a clinic. And on the way, her parents, I think her father and maybe another family member came, and they got in with us. And so we went up to the clinic, and the doctors came and the nurses, and they told us that she was going to be okay. We were all relieved for that. But her family wanted her to go to a hospital, so we became the ambulance. She was loaded in our vehicle again, and we went about 45 minutes back the way we had come. and we went to a police compound. And so the driver, who was a hired driver, was impounded along with his car. We learned later that he had to stay there for several days until that all got cleared up. So we paid for the taxi to get her to the hospital to have x-rays. And then we had to wait for another vehicle to come to get us. We had to transfer everything. So finally, we're ready to go. We're leaving out of the compound. And the driver goes out toward the front gate, and the luggage rack on top hits this big sign that's high, but not high enough. So he hits the sign. We thought we had befriended the police chief, but he was really angry with us. So there was another exit in the back, and so the driver turned around, and we got out of there. So the driver did stay in there. We learned later about 3 or 4 days, but everything turned out okay. We bore the expense of all that. So the roads are terrible, but the Ethiopian countryside is beautiful. This is a picture of the countryside. So after giving you a little flavor of what we experience as we travel around, I want to tell you a little about teaching Jesus to women and children. The first time I went to Ethiopia in 2001, I was teaching a ladies' Bible class at the local church in the city. Thought I did a pretty good job. I hadn't taught ladies that exclusively that much, but stopped for questions, and Martha raised her hand. Martha, by the way, who is now Zerahun's wife, Martha raised her hand, and she said, "Can you bring a woman from your country to teach us?" Well, I thought, well, I just taught you. Did I do that bad? But I learned later that what she was saying is that they could use a woman who understands women to come and teach them. So I said, I see what I could do. It took me a couple of years, but I found somebody in Pat Underwood, who was a member at Castleberry, and she went with me in the year 2000. Some of you may know Pat. She passed away last year after suffering a bout with cancer. She became known in the Ethiopian countryside by the nickname Agape, and I'll tell you about that a little more in a moment. So Pat went with me, and our work took on a new dimension. We taught children, and she taught ladies. Before then, only preachers were teaching children in Bible classes. Women didn't think they should do it or could do it, so we taught them what the Scripture says. And she encouraged and emboldened and instructed Ethiopian women in many things about their home lives, their marriages, and their rearing of children changed because of the good work that Pat did. So I brought along some pictures. That was a... So she's teaching... Somebody had made bracelets, and she's giving them a gift. So we teach thousands of children, and they just brought many containers of those. She's teaching about Paul being in prison. And this year, someone made bookmarks, and we gave them bookmarks. Do you know what they had on them? Something in pictures. And in Amharic, we wrote it in Amharic. So all the kids were showing the bookmarks. So along the way, I took other people also. This is my daughter and my niece. And Pat mentored them. And they learned to teach children. And the two on the outside are my sons and my nephew in the middle there. So my children went once each. This is Susan. Who has gone with me 3 times to Ethiopia. And she is teaching children. We use a system where we have pictures and they tell the story as they we make a flip book out of it. So you flip through the pictures and tell the story. You can see Pat back in the picture and Susan. This time we gave them some kind of stickers. Were they for leprosy or? Yeah. One time we gave them little dots for leprosy. So they came out from being taught and they had little dots all over them. So that was just past January. And you might recognize this lady. So what lesson was that? You can't tell? Oh, the plagues, yeah. So really, the primary work that Pat did was in teaching Ethiopian women. And she loved them, and they loved her. And she did a good job in teaching them. And Susan does, too. She does a good job. And there's somebody you may know. So the reason Pat is called Agape is because when she finishes teaching, as the ladies leave the hut, she hugged every one of them. That is, if there was 100 or less. We told her if it was over 100, it just takes too much time. But if there were about 100, she would hug every lady as they came out. So she became known as Agape in the Ethiopian countryside. This is a lady in Ancha. And every year, I can remember, she came for her hug. And this year, Susan took up the mantle where Pat could not do it any longer, and she hugged the ladies as they came out also. So Paul, in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, said, I not only taught you the gospel, but I gave you my own life. I invested myself, and that's what we try to do in our Ethiopia work. So the ladies hug these ladies, and when we leave a village, some older man always gets up and makes a speech of thanks. They thank us, they thank our families, they thank our congregations for sending us. And sometimes they'll say, I think I've heard this about two times, a man will say, and she hugs our dirty women. I mean, they understand that they don't bathe like we do, but they appreciate that. And I think it reinforces the gospel message. So, I've talked about our preaching and teaching work in the city and the countryside, our work with women and children. And the third aspect of our work that I want to talk about just a little is training preachers. So, I think maybe that's where our work is going to be focused more in the future. Because if we can train Ethiopian preachers, they can go more places and be more effective, not having translators and so forth. So along the way, here's what's happened. We've talked about how to organize your thoughts and how to make a talk in which you have like points 1, 2, and 3 so people can follow your train of thought. So about 3 years into that, I got to an Ethiopian, a pretty good preacher for the Ethiopians. I said, I want him to preach for me and have it translated from Amharic into English. So we did that, and I learned from that we still had a lot of work to do. But they have listened and they have learned. They have almost no resources. They have a Bible, and we've bought them concordances, and that's about all the research material they have except things that we provided for them. So our lessons, and when we go over like the big picture of the Bible, or one year they wanted me to study the book of Zechariah or the book of Revelation or Romans, or we study those with them. That's a really significant thing for those men. So we get a bunch of men together. They come from various places. And we teach maybe 50 or 75 for about 3 days. And that's much more cost efficient, and it's more effective for us. because we can't reach that many men in the time we stay. So what's happening now is that when we started that work, we paid for their expenses, all their travel expenses, all their accommodations, for them to come to where we would be and stay for 3 days. But now the Ethiopians are beginning to pay some for themselves. So we do about half and half now. And so we've talked to them along the way that this needs to happen, that they need to have buy-in and commitment to this work. So I just have a few pictures. So that is a chant that's Muslim? No, it's Orthodox. And every morning about 5 o'clock you start hearing that, or earlier. It's really annoying. So I don't know how that slide got in there, really. So here we go on our way to have a class for preachers. He's deciding, the driver's deciding which way to go. They often stop and put it into four-wheel drive. So actually, this was this year. We went to Locho. Yikes. Actually, Greg, were y'all with us? No. Somebody else was with us. We got out of that vehicle before it went over the bridge. But when we came back, the driver didn't like the fact that we got out. So when we're going back, he didn't stop. He just went right across. I had a slide out of order there. What this is I'm trying to show what happens in a day's work in a village. So we go. You just saw the travel. And we get there about 10 or 10:30 in the morning. And some people are there. Sometimes we go and nobody has come yet. So it happens gradually. People come and they're walking and they have all kinds of stuff going on in their life and on the roads, in their personal situation. So little by little they come. They certainly don't all get there at the same time. So we have an opening assembly in which we have a devotional talk. Here I am making the devotional talk. And then we divide into classes. And if we have enough translators, we divide into men, women, and children. And this year, Greg and I taught about elders when we had the men's class. And in some cases, Christy and Susan taught women about being wives of preachers and wives of elders, wives of leading men, as they call it. So we have a divided time. That's our men's class. This is at a place called Uyaya. There's somebody you know teaching about elders. And this would be the ladies' class. I guess it's a combination of ladies and children. Susan was talking about Pat. We tried to comfort them and give them hope in regard to Pat's death this year. And in fact, the sermon that I brought, I usually have one sermon I preach everywhere, and this year I preached a sermon called Some Things I Learned About Following Jesus from Pat Underwood. Teaching them how to say that in English. So by the time the day is over, there are many, many more people. Tell you a little about what happened. That's an antiphonal song, like Psalm 136. So what the singer is doing, he is saying the verses, and everybody responds with the chorus, the same chorus. And if he is a really talented and skillful singer, he can make it up as he goes along, and he'll tailor it to whatever we've taught that day or whatever's been happening in the assembly. So here are the pictures about training preachers that I talked about. That's a group in Hosanna. And these are some older men, leading men. This was in 2016. This was a group that had just started. A man who had been preaching for a denomination had been converted, and he in time converted most of the people for whom he taught. And so we were having a workshop for them, a question and answer period after the morning worship on Sunday. And this is a workshop that we did this year about elders. And we did it in the city as well as in the countryside. So this was our second period countryside team this year. And we try to use illustrations and tell stories that make the point come to life and memorable. We try to greet in their language. Depending on where we go, we say Tumafa Yakata or Tumafa Yowa. And that's a greeting. And we try to sing songs with them when we can. So I'm going to try to, and that's Greg telling his story. So I want to try to get us all to sing this song. It's taken from Ephesians chapter 2, where Paul talks about people who are Jews and Gentiles coming together. So let me show you a little about the song. Yemuskin, Yemuskin. Is a word for God, and geta is another word for God. So if you look at the first line of the stanza, it says yemesgen geta, and it's reversed in the second one, geta yamesgen, and then amlak yamesgen. So it has the word God in it in each stanza. Now let me show you something. The ending of the second line is gen, ada deragen. And then the second one is yasta wawokin. It rhymes. The third one is yasa mamadin and yafa saralin. So they rhyme, their songs rhyme like ours do. So I'm going to sing it for you to let you know how it goes, and then we're all going to try it. So it goes, Yay Musken Geta Anda Daragan, Geta Yamesgan, Yasta Wawoken, Amlak Yamesgan, Yaza Mamadin, Yeru gira gira bare mu ya farasalem. All right, now, these guys up here are going to help us. Yemas gen geta anda daragen. Geta yamas gan yasta wawoken. Amlak yamas gan yazamamadin. Yeda gida gida bade mu yafarasalin. Good. One more time. Yemas gen geta anda daragen. Geta yamas gan yasta wawoken. Amlak yamas gan yazamamadin. Yeda gida gida bade mu yafarasalin. So now you can tell everybody you know that you sang a song in Amharic. So, I wish my little speaker was working. Let me see if I can make it work just a minute. Yes, it's connected. All right. So, the last line. Thank you so much for the opportunity to share with you a little. A significant thing about our work in Ethiopia is that we preach the same gospel, we preach the same Jesus, and we want to help them know him and follow him. And that's what I would do here or anywhere else. And we thank God for the opportunity to share such wonderful good news in Ethiopia. And I thank you. Greg and Christy have been generous supporters, and some of you have too, and I appreciate that of our Ethiopian work. So anything else? Okay. So we're going to have a song of invitation, I heard. Yeah. So in our, this doesn't happen in Ethiopia. They don't have an invitation song, but a lot of people respond to the gospel in other settings, but it's a custom in our country to do that. And it gives people an opportunity to express a spiritual need, maybe to express that they want to be baptized or somehow bring their lives into conformity to God's will. And we want to extend that invitation from Jesus, who says, "Come unto me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest." So if we can help you with that tonight, I hope you're encouraged about Jesus. And if we can help you, let us know as we stand and sing together.